Welcome to the Round 5 Supercoach Coach Podcast. My name's Marcus, and this week I'm joined, as per usual, by FB Donkey.
G'day, mate.
And we've got special guest Faz joining us for Season 2016. You joined us, of course, in the pre-season, so we're looking forward to hearing how your team went, mate.
Yeah, g'day, lads. Unfortunately, not doing too well so far, but looking forward to getting into the show and talking a bit of Supercoach.
Plenty of trades left, so plenty of time to turn things around, although Mark won't let you hear the end of it, as he's not let me hear the end of doing poorly, so good luck making it through the show, mate. Let's go around the table with how we all scored before we get into anything else. So, pretty sure Mark trumps again. God.
Yeah.
God. So, yeah, go for it, mate. You can have the honours.
I scored 21.09 on the weekend, which seemed like a pretty average score, but everyone else did fairly poorly. So I'm inside the top 10,000. Look at that. Down to four figures on my way up. 8,802. I guess that I just missed the really, really crap scores or the really bad things that a lot of other teams had, like a Papley on the ground sort of thing. It was good to see Daniel Rich score 114. Ablett captain. Nothing else really special. Yeah, like I said, just missed the low ones. I still got a few concerns in my team, like Barlow and Bartel did not look awesome on the weekend.
So that was a pretty good score this week, actually, Mark. I was surprised you cracked 2,100. I was kind of hoping you wouldn't pull ahead again by that sort of margin, but well done
starting
to you, mate.
Starting to get a couple hundred points, mate.
I know. Well, I think we've broken the 200-point barrier in terms of differential, so that's getting a little bit nervous. But as we know, it just takes one lucky captain's choice or one unlucky rookie decision from you, and hopefully I can get back into it. Hopefully we both do well, but, you know, it'd be good
especially
if I
caught
up.
Especially you.
Thanks, mate. Faz, how'd you go last week?
Pretty poor one. I've not been doing all that well all year, and this was the worst of them all. 19.29 for me. It's been quite a while since we've seen Supercoach scores down below 2K. Hope for your guys' sake that you don't have to experience it at all this year. So ranking is looking bad inside the top 60,000, Mark. So, you know, only six times as worse. we're probably on my way to six figures rather than four figures the way the team's going. Just a few bad rookie choices. Had Tipper on the bench. I just brought Ruggles into the team and he was on field. So that was a fair swing of points. Papley on field. Oliver was on field instead of Callum Mills. But I did get Nat Fyfe into my team last week. So excited about that. And
nice one.
Cruz is a guy that was in my team, a bit of a unique pick that has not turned out well at all.
So that's not good at all.
That's your Achilles heel, mate.
Well, he's gone now. That was Fyfe came in for Cruiser. Okay. So thankfully got. You were saying on the podcast last week, I think you were saying, don't trade unless you're pretty sure you've made a mistake. And I was pretty sure that I'd made a mistake with Cruz. And don't have to deal with that anymore, thankfully. How'd you go? I think you were about in the middle of the two of us, Bo.
Yeah, so smack bang in the middle, I think. I was 100 points both of you and 100 points behind Mark. So I scored 20.33 for the round, which I'm not too devastated about. I held on the trades in the end. So it took a lot of willpower, I gotta admit. And it may not be the correct decision, but I thought I'd take the punt and hold off on trading out a Brad Crouch. I'll hold off on putting the 247,000 back into a better premium. You know, I could have traded Wines to Fyfe, would have got me that 60 something points, would have broke me into the 2100 club, but held off, and hopefully that works out in the long run. Sitting at 26,000 at the moment. So I still went up this week, which is not too bad. But sitting at this rank, I am a little bit nervous. But, you know, all I can do is keep my fingers crossed. It really hurt to have Crouch out these last few weeks because I had, you know, Menadue on field last week. And this week, after Menadue scored 58, I thought, oh, Ryan Davis against Brisbane. Surely he'll beat that. Scores 37. Now, at least I didn't put Papley on field, who would have netted me 24 points. So I need Crouch back, and the rumours are he could be a chance for this week. So I'm keeping my fingers crossed that that works out, and I will be looking at a trade very, very shortly. Hopefully put that money back into my team and start catching up to you, Mark.
Yeah, my wife asked me to mention that she's ranked about 10,000, which is a lot higher than you guys.
Ouch.
Well done, Mel.
Yeah. I am happy to tag out if you two want to host a show together and give me the night off. So let me know if she takes us up on that. All right, that's enough at talking about our scores because sick of talking about Mark beating me every week. We'll move on to just preview the show. So this week, we've taken questions again from Facebook at facebook.com/supercoachcoach and on Twitter at supercoachcoach. Thanks a bunch for all your questions. The main topics for the week are the injury to JJ and how to deal with that in the back line. And as well as that, looking at some rookies. We've got four defensive rookies all on the bubble this week. Hopefully that doesn't rid us of downgrade targets in a few weeks' time, because most of us, Mark, you and I, we're running plenty of rookies, mate. So we're going to need some downgrade targets, and perhaps we might have to target them a bit more aggressively this week. Apart from rookies and that injury to JJ, we'll look at some key ins and outs that we got asked about, and that'll form our show.
I think that I just want to preface the JJ conversation by saying that was just really bad luck. Like, it looked like he'd actually be a really good pick, and the people that traded him in, just super unlucky.
I swear to God, I thought you were going to say, "I told you so, I told you so, I told you so."
That's what I was going to say next. No. It's a weird situation when you predict something, but then it's like bad luck that causes that to happen.
Because he was slaying it on the weekend. He was, I think, 97 points already. Injury was
From what I heard, he was like 75 or so when he got injured, and then somehow got scaled up like 20-odd points.
That did help his owners, who saw him get a 10K price hike due to that 97, because otherwise he probably would have stayed about the same, if not for the scaling upwards. So he has gone up 45K and averaged 105 from his starting price at 420. So you're forced to look at the silver lining here, unfortunately. But yeah, we'll discuss ways to deal with it in this week's show. So don't forget that we are an independent podcast, and you can head to patreon.com/supercoachcoach for those of you out there who are feeling generous. We've had people join up to the Patreon campaign throughout the last few weeks, so thank you very much to all our new supporters. A buck a show is all we ask for, if you can afford that, so we thank you very much to our Patreon supporters out there. And before we get into the crux of the show, Mark, we got a question here first from @footyfunk. Is there an eliminator in Supercoach this year? So I had a quick look on the website, and I don't think there is this year. There's no more Supercoach Cup. So unfortunately, it looks like we miss out on the Eliminator, which I thought that was a pretty good competition last year, and I would have preferred the first week of sort of luck money that went to 18 individuals to have gone back into that Supercoach Eliminator. I didn't realize that that's what we lost for the round one league prize, but it appears that was the trade-off, unfortunately.
That's always been a huge success in Dream Team, and it is an interesting competition when a lot of people are not going to win the 50K, but it keeps them in something else.
Yeah, I guess the conversation wasn't as robust around the Supercoach Cup because they restricted it to only subscribers of the Herald Sun. Sure. So I think that probably affected it a little bit. But it's unfortunate to see, but unfortunately, Footy Funk, it doesn't appear like there's an eliminator. We'll update this space if we hear different, but until then, sad face. All right, we'll move on to the crux of the show now. First question, and we'll start off with the injury questions first, is from Kaylor or @TarkinTate. On Twitter, the JJ conundrum, who to replace him with. Mark, why don't you hit us up with your top two, and then Faz and then myself, let's go around that way.
Sure. So my top candidate would be Cade Kolodziejczyk. I'm just been super impressed by what I've seen from him so far. A little bit lower score on the weekend, but out of all the defenders, he seems to me the one that could actually go above 100. I think that some of them have averaged above the 100 so far, but I don't really see him continuing with that. Kolodziejczyk probably does get that a little extra bit of midfield time. And my second option would probably be Hawley. I know that he had a bit of a stinker on the weekend, but I think he's really safe and has great durability. Him and Laird are probably 50-50, though. What do you reckon, Faz?
I'm going to go for a value pick for my first option. It's Orazio Fantasia from the Bombers. He was in my starting team, actually, for a lot of preseason, but didn't get a gig round one. So I guess I chickened out there, and kicking myself seeing his scoring, because in these three games, he's scored 91, 87, and 96. He looks to have put on a bit of weight onto his frame. the team's obviously just trying to, you know, get as many games into these young players as possible. So there is the risk, I guess, later in the season he might not play the full season. They'll rest him a couple of games here and there. But at that price, 329, he's already gone up 48,000 because he's played three games now. But I still think that he presents enough value that he could be a good pick. And if he doesn't end up being a top six, you could use a luxury trade later in the season to turn him into someone that presents value later on. For number two, I'd go with Rory Laird as my second option. He's, you know, a bit expensive, 516, but yeah, he's been killing it so far, very consistent, and yeah, he showed what he's got last year. I think he's just going to keep getting better as a footballer.
Yeah, Fantasia's an interesting one. I think last week he would have been a fairly sweet pick. He missed round one, so fair enough to be tentative with him, Faz, and chickening out there. I would probably have done the same thing.
Actually,
that's not true. I picked Menzel. I let my bias ride. Anyway, Fantasia, he's only in 3,000 teams at the moment. It's a risky pick for sure, but at least it's in your back line. For my two picks, I'm going to go with KK, same as you, Mark. I think that he looks like he's on par with the other primo backline players to me, but I see potentially a little bit more extra upside in him because of his youth, because of his talent, because of potentially playing a little bit of midfield minutes on the wing. So I like that selection, Mark, echoing that. And he's only in 20,000 teams, which is pretty good. You know, Rant and Hooley, Laird, they all have higher selection numbers than him. And then the next one that I'd recommend is probably Heath Shaw. Now, he's dropped 60K. He's only averaging 90 at the moment. So I understand that not everyone would be crash hot on him. But I think all three of us, I'm guessing, we all paid that extra cash for Heath Shaw. His break even's 124. You can meet that this week. If you don't have Shaw, you have the money to bring him in. I think he's a fairly safe pick. He's safe for the top six backman. And sure, he's still expensive. He's still the most expensive backline player this week. But if you're getting one of the top two defenders potentially, why not?
Yeah, he's just had given away a few too many free kicks so far. I don't think he's far off averaging 100+. Seems like he's in the right form, going to get enough of the ball. It's just needs to tidy up a few of those free kicks.
Yeah, scoring 70+ across all four of the games so far is good signs. It's normally, you know, the 30s, 40s, 50s scores that kill you with those inconsistent backline players. So
my wife had Bob Murphy going into last week and bought in Hooley. Hooley scored like, what, 50 on the Friday night. She was pretty devastated. Her alternative was Jason Johannesson, though.
Oh, dodged the bullet there. So.
Dodged the bullet.
Good one. We're just going to go through the backline options for JJ because I have a feeling that most people don't have a mid-back in their midfield. They don't have a depth forward in their forward. Most people would stack the rookies in the back line, I'm assuming, and most people wouldn't pick premium defenders outside of the back line. So we're going off that assumption. We can understand that people have different trade situations outside of that. DPP makes trading very complex nowadays, but we'll skip on past the midfields and forwards for now. And we'll come back to some trading targets later on, so we can have a discussion about that. I've got one more question before we move off JJ, though, and this is from Shane Dean on Facebook. Is Biggs the real deal or just a trade into risk? Shane Biggs has averaged 98.25 so far this year. Seems like all these Bullies players are smashing it. He scored 120 over the weekend, lowest score of 77 so far. And even though he's gone up 35K, he's only priced at 425K. And being in only 3,100 teams, he's absolutely unique. What do you guys reckon? Too risky, or could he take some points with Murphy out and now Johannesson out for a little while?
Yeah, like you'd expect him to fill their shoes and definitely pick up a more reliable part of that points. So I guess he's a decent pick, but still think he's a really risky one as well.
I'd echo those thoughts. It's very tempting to trade into these players, but even the Bullies, as dominant as they are for the first four rounds, you'd think they still got to drop a few games and there might be inconsistencies in form over the course of the year. So I'd be wary about him keeping that up. At 425,000, he really needs to be a keeper. A lot of backline players can drop down to the 400K mark when they hit their poor scores. To the next question, it's from at Year of the Mar. Please advise, keep or trade Stefan Martin. So I've actually read that Martin has pulled up reasonably well from a concussion and is a shot to play this week. So I think it's sort of if he plays, you definitely keep. If he's out, would you then definitely trade or would that be a maybe? Faz, what are your thoughts on that?
I think I saw on one of the football programs yesterday, it might have been AFL 360, they were saying that they should keep him out of the game just for the look of the AFL are saying that they're taking concussion seriously these days, and that was a very bad looking hit. So even if he has sort of fully recovered, it's probably best just to give him a rest. But that being said, even if he misses a week, I'd be hesitant to be trading because he's looking like he's been in pretty good form. I'd be surprised if he didn't end up being one of the top few ruckmen behind Goldstein, and I haven't looked at the prices, but I'm guessing you couldn't do a trade to Goldstein would cost quite a bit of money. So that'd be the only situation if you didn't have Goldstein and you felt like switching, then you know you could maybe think about that. But
680 is pretty expensive with his 170 score.
I don't think you can really get him at this point. You probably just have to wait for him to come back, and so I'd be holding on to Stefan.
I think if you could get Goldstein in one trade, or like if you had the cash there, then I would probably do Martin to Goldstein if Martin missed this week. But other than that, like it's one game, it's 100 points. Is it worth a trade? It's probably not. It's a really crap spot. I've got Nick Natanui, who'll probably miss a game at some point. I'll probably just have to eat the donut. I think that's just going to be how we roll in the rocks.
Yep, I agree with that. Later in the year, when your trades are worth a little bit less, and when you have a little bit more visibility over the rounds left and how many trades you'll need to navigate those rounds, you may consider that. But, you know, this early on in the season, who knows? We could be hit by injuries left, right, and center for the next few rounds, and then you'd be wishing you held on to Martin for an extra week. So I agree with both of you. We'll move on to the rookie discussion now, and it's probably the main point of discussion for the week because it affects absolutely everyone. And I've been getting a lot of comments that cash generation isn't quite what we'd hoped it'd be this year. So that's the question I want to address first. This question's from Mustafa, and it's just one of many that we got. Well, at MustiD69, rookies aren't making dollars as quick as we hoped. What are our options? Sell them anyway or hold? Do we wait for them to come back in the team and hopefully move back up in price? So, Mark, what are your thoughts about comments that, you know, we're not getting enough cash generation this year?
I don't know about that. You just got to be a little bit patient. I mean, we've got, like, in my side, I've got Wietering and D, Tip Motti, McCarthy looks like he could go up a fair bit, Carriage, Kennedy, Wells. I think that there's quite a lot of cash generation around. I can understand that it looks like Davis and Menadue might stall a bit. Brown's not quite living up to expectations. Papley hasn't, and Hewitt is stuck on the bench. So I can understand that impression, but there's still enough moneymakers around. I think you probably have to give, like, Hewitt a chance to just, like, hope that he comes back in the next few weeks, I guess, rather than just wasting a trade on him. I don't think you only want to be forcing that, but I know we'll get into it that Papley at 224 with a high break-even is probably closer to the line where you might be looking to make a trade.
Yep.
Good news for Hewitt owners here. I just saw that he's had 28 disposals and laid 14 tackles in the reserves on the weekend. So if he keeps that up, he won't be out of the team for too long, you wouldn't think.
Yeah, I think he was named. I was very keen to see how he went. He's named sixth best on the weekend. So definitely around the mark. Zach Jones was fifth best, though. So he's definitely competitive there. And
Dean Towers had a shocker against the Crows. So Hewitt is a little bit like for like in that regard.
Yep. Overall, though, I'd agree with your sentiments, Mark. I think it's patience is the key. It just takes one big score from a rookie for things to turn around. And I think what gets overlooked a lot this year is that most of us had no issues going completely guns and rookies, which is kind of an indication to how much rookie availability we had this year. And we've had players like D work out surprisingly well, and people may be forgetting that we got Wells for 240K. He's averaging 100. Carriage, he's averaging 83. Ben Kennedy's the same. And Aaron Hall, 120K, is averaging like a beast. So there's definitely a lot of points of value generation in our teams. And I think that overall, it's best not to panic. It's not best to sell too early. And it's best to stay patient, as you said, Mark. The good part is if you're dealing with the slow cash generation, so is everyone else. You just got to make better decisions around that than everyone else. Don't buy into the hype of making popular, perhaps impulsive trades and trading yourself into a bad situation, which is tends to be the risk when we're playing Supercoach. It's hard to hold your nerve.
It is, mate.
All right. On to the question on who to actually trade out now. So we're going to break this up into two parts, trade outs and then trade ins. So I'm just going to list a whole bunch of rookies now, and you guys can fire at me who you think we should be trading out or who you think we should be keeping. So Dion Abels asked about Papley, Malera, Hewitt. Jib Rangers, he's asked about Davis or Brown. And Ashley Proud, Menadue or Ben Kennedy. So these are all blokes that their break even started to catch up to the actual scoring. Now, Ben Kennedy's one that surprised me, but after 200s in his first 2 weeks, he scored 50 and 60 in his last two. So even he's falling into that category. Now, of all these, was it seven blokes that I listed, Mark, who would you have as a trade out target?
I'll just deal with Ben Kennedy first. I think he's slightly different because he's on everyone's field, or he's definitely on my field, and I expect him to stay that way. The players that are on your field, you really want to be upgrading them rather than downgrading them if you can. Otherwise, you're taking points off your field. There probably are some exceptions to that. Menadue, hopefully he keeps getting games. He's not ready yet. Davis, Brown, I'd expect them to keep going up a little bit if they keep playing. Malera is injured and will miss at least this week, and had a really low score on the weekend. So him and Papley are probably the ones to me to be looking to trade out, because they have earned a little bit and they're stalling in price. And so you can make a little bit of money out of them, and it's going to take quite a while for them to make much more money than they have now. Because Papley had 24 on the weekend, that's through his price movement for three rounds. He'd have to pump out rounds one and two, like 100 scores again, to get that price moving again.
Malera's only gone up 40K, though. Would you still...
I guess he's gone up 40K, but one of the good things there is because he's started off so expensive, you still get some money out of a downgrade, if you know what I mean. Like, if you traded him to one of the rookies available this week, you'd still get 100,000.
Papley's one of those two that I've got. I'm looking to hold on to him just because I've looked at their upcoming schedule and seen that Sydney have West Coast coming up this week, so probably another tough game. But then the two following weeks are Brisbane and Essendon, so I'm just hoping that, you know, there's a potential for another big game there, because he seemed to do well in the big wins earlier in the season, and once the game's got a bit tighter, also coincided with Ben McGlynn coming back into the team, so it's hard to know which one to attribute it to, but I think I'll just be holding. I've already used a few trades, too many, so I think I'll just have to hold my nerve for now.
Yep, I agree with you guys. A basic rule, I think, is under 200K, definitely try and hold off. Even generally under 250K, you do your best to try and extract a little bit more value out of that. 150K is normally the least I like to take out of a downgrade. But having said that, early cash generation is also a positive. It's also a boon. And if you can stimulate an upgrade as a result of an early downgrade, then why not? And I think we canvassed this before picking up Papley and recommending Papley. We always knew his downside, and he was unlikely to keep averaging 100. I think you said he'd more closely reflect an average of 70, Mark, and I don't think you realized just how fast he'd hit that, because 46 and 24 later, he's currently averaging 70.75. We acknowledge that, though, and we said at worst, he's, you know, the fastest cash generation that you're going to get in two rounds. So,
like, you've got worst case scenario from Papley, but it's still almost bearable.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's a risk we took, and the good thing is there's so many rookies on the bubble this week and an opportunity to trade.
That's right. So I think that's what's forcing these questions, is that we've got four back rookies that we're looking at this week, and we might not get any for a little while. So that kind of might force you into making a trade if you haven't used too many trades already, just because you've got to sort of select the good rookies when they do come up, even though the timing isn't quite right.
Now, Menadue's the only one that I potentially have a question over, because he's at 210K and he's had one score above, you know, 63, that 80 in the first round. But overall, he does look like he potentially isn't going to score a massive amount, and you might have to wait a little while for a big payoff. But having said that, that mid-forward flexibility is handy as well, and you could definitely see him potentially breaking 300K with a good run at some stage. But he'd be the only one that I'd question. Maybe you could trade him out as well.
Yeah.
Okay, so we'll look at the actual trade-in targets now to continue this discussion. This is a question from Troy or at Rumbles. We've got so many questions about these rookies, so thank you all for your questions. Ruggles, Byrne, Jones, and Wagner. Who to trade in? Could you please
rank
them? And Byrne. So there's two Byrnes.
There's a Byrne Jones and a Byrne.
Mm. Thoughts on these players?
You've got to be careful you don't get burned.
Mate.
I would have Byrne Jones clearly number one. He did score 97 on the weekend. I guess that the tricky part about that score is the ball spent an awful lot of time in GWS's forward 50. So there was plenty of opportunity for him to get possessions. But he has been on the list for a few years now. And he did look good in what was pretty bad performance from Port. So you'd hope he'd get a few more games. So he definitely is a standout for me this week.
based on the average, he'd have to be. And I think quite a few people have commented to say that he does appear to be in their best 22. He has played well the last couple of games. He has scored a goal in each of the last couple of games. So I can definitely understand the temptation for Darcy. I would worry that the 97 is still an aberration playing the role that he does, and considering Port Adelaide's start to the year, you know, it could definitely taper out, and I could definitely see one of the other three working out better in terms of cash generation. But it's so close to call that you almost take the current average as a good indicator. I think Tom Ruggles, who we talked up last week, is a little bit concerning, considering that I think Enright was out and Murdoch was back in. So if Enright comes in, it's either Murdoch out or Ruggles out, and based on experience and maybe even last game played, that could be Ruggles.
Cole Jasny was a late in, so he might be the first one out.
That's definitely true as well. So there's job security issues down at Geelong.
The big concern for us that's happened since the last podcast is that McCarthy was dropped. It just shows how fragile the job security is going to be for these Geelong rookies potentially.
Definitely agree with that.
Just on the McCarthy one, I've got my fingers crossed that it was a resting rather than a dropping. I'm not sure, because they had Essendon, I think teams will be using that as a chance to rest players. It's early in the season, so
yeah,
it'd be strange for him to rest him. But I'm just, you know, wishful thinking.
That's definitely fair. I think on the Geelong website, it was said that they were trying to manage him because of his previous injury history. And so he wasn't definitely not just dropped outright, even though it said omitted.
Tommy Ruggles was taking a lot of the kick-ins. He does have a really good body shape. Is that a little bit older as well? He could definitely work out really well. Certainly not ruling him out, but there's probably some concerns there now that weren't there last week.
Yeah, and to be clear, I think it's Gregson, Cockatoo, McCarthy, Menzel fighting for the forward spot, and, you know, like Murdoch, Buse, Ruggles,
Cole Jasny
fighting for the backline spot. So they are separate battles, but overall, you are right, Mike. There's a bit of a fragility in terms of best 22 prospects at Geelong.
I'm really hoping that Ruggles turns out, because I had to make a downgrade last week to Ford to get Fife into my team. And
didn't take Hartley, mate.
Yeah, I didn't really like the look of Hartley's probably scoring potential. I thought, I was worried I was getting another Mitch Brown into my team and sort of have two backline spots filled up with tall defenders not scoring very well. But unfortunately, Ruggles didn't score very well at all on the weekend. Had a few skill errors and things against Essendon. So the concerns about his job security are obviously warranted. But, you know, given that he's already in there for me, I'm hoping like hell that he works out, because I really hadn't considered the other guys. I didn't really notice Darcy Byrne-Jones in the game against Essendon, and I think he's really shot onto the radar because of how well he scored in the loss to GWS on the weekend. Yeah, the other two I don't really know too much about, and would be, I guess, just concerned about job security.
They're all mature ages, aren't they?
Yes, they are. Yeah. I would actually have, out of the four, I'd have Wagner ranked second out of those guys. I know he's probably fourth on a lot of people's lists, but I just think that he offers something to Melbourne that maybe the other players don't. Left footer coming out of the back line, bit of rebound. I just think that maybe the competition for his spot at Melbourne isn't as strong as maybe the competition that the others are facing. Obviously, Kieran Byrne from Carlton, he plays for Carlton, so he might get a bunch of games for them. But yeah, Wagner's actually my specky for number two.
I think if Ruggles gets a game this week and holds his spot, all of a sudden you have a heap more confidence about his job security, in which case I would have him closer to the top vying with Darcy. But otherwise, I would actually have him close to the bottom. I mean, if he gets dropped this week and everybody else spot, I mean, obviously then you don't even have to trade him in this week. He stays on the bubble for the foreseeable future until he gets back in. So that might decide it for you. I think I would agree with you on Wagner. He's come from the NAFL playing for Aspley and picked at number six in the rookie draft. And he's quite a tall player. He's just got good attributes to him. And we got a few questions asking why none of us are talking about Wagner. And that's just because he's not been in the system for very long. So first year drafted and already playing games in rounds 3 and 4, they are good signs.
And he played in the game against North, which Melbourne's coaching staff was quite happy about, and in the win against Collingwood. So I think it helps if you come into your team and your team's winning and you seem to be part of a culture change in that team or an attitude change in that team, because he wasn't there for the Essendon clash, then I think that bodes well for him.
Hmm. does really feel like a lottery out of these guys, though, especially because they're all mature age. Like, see Aaron Burney, even. He has one game playing like Zach Tui. You know, he could just randomly score a big game and he could work out well. So it's hard to pick. You'd almost pick on job security. And so I'd have Darcy and Josh pretty high up there.
So what do you think about double downgrading this week just because there are so many options?
Yeah, so that's a question that we did get from Adam Whitfield this week. So thank you for your question on Twitter, Adam. It kind of depends on the situation you're in, I think. If you have no money in bank, then double down looks good. But another question here from Troy Rodney. So in my situation, once I downgrade, I have heaps of cash I could potentially upgrade with. So I think if you have cash in bank, it's hard to recommend double downing and just building a ridiculous bank of cash. But if you didn't have much money and you were worried about picking backline replacements for your rookies, it would be valid. The only worry for me is that a lot of us are starting a lot of backline rookies, and unless you're trading out a backline rookie like Brown or Tippo or Wietering or like most of us aren't trading out these backline rookies yet. Like, you're stacking your field with more backline rookies by trading in two. How many do you have on field, Mark, at the moment? Three?
I have three, but I'm reasonably confident with Adams, Wietering, and D in there at the moment.
Well, let's say you traded in another two. Even if you traded one of the rookies out to the forward line like Adams, you'd still be playing four defenders in your back line all of a sudden. I mean, that surely is a little bit worrying, playing that many rookie defenders on field.
No, I'd still have three. I wouldn't be changing the amount of back line rookies. So if I did Papley to Darcy Byrne-Jones, then I'd bring Tipper forward, and so he'd just be on my forward bench instead.
But if you were double downing, for example, and you were taking, you know, like a Hewitt to the back line for Rich, for example, you'd be putting another rookie on field there. I just think it's something to keep in mind. Yes, you're creating cash generation, but you're also sacrificing points in the meantime, potentially, because you're playing a back line rookie instead of a midfield or forward rookie all of a sudden.
Well, I guess an example of that would be I was thinking of trading potentially Degoe down to one of these backline rookies, and that would bring Tipper onto the field up forward for me.
So it's just something to keep in mind. I don't think it necessarily rules in or out a trade decision, but I know, Faz, you've done that in the past, downgrade too much in one position without realizing that forced you to wait for the cash generation in order to be able to trade them out down the track. So
yeah, you get stuck, I guess, with those two because they're all backline options that we're looking at. So if you're doing the double downgrade, you'd have your two bench spots filled up with these two guys.
Yeah.
And then if you still had a Mitch Brown or someone, you'd be waiting for them to go up in price. And
exactly right.
I don't love any of these options enough to suggest a double downgrade. And the fact that, as well, that a lot of the guys that we talked about originally to downgrade from, the Papleys and exactly managers, right, you're not generating enough cash. I wouldn't want to be doing two trades to only come away with sort of $200,000 in the bank. It doesn't quite seem like enough value for me.
Yeah.
Yep.
I agree with that. Mark, you too, I'm guessing?
Agreed.
Yeah, cool. All right, we will move to the next question then. Troy Rodney, I already mentioned it. So if you had the opportunity to downgrade, you had cash in bank, would you then recommend upgrading?
Yeah, I guess it depends on which rookie and which position, but if you've got a underperforming or mid-pricer or a rookie that I guess has matured, I don't think that there's any easy route there that I'd really be confident that they've matured, but I'm not a huge fan of keeping a huge sum in the bank for more than a week.
In my situation, for example, if I took Papley down to a rookie, it net me like 370K in bank or something like that. So you'd be looking at trading up another rookie then, a suboptimal rookie.
Well, because otherwise we'd get onto next week's show and you'd be like, oh, you might have beaten me, but I had 400,000 on the bench.
Glad that's all you care about, mate, that I don't have any excuses. No, I do agree, though, overall. I'll be tempted, very tempted, to upgrade somewhere on my field this week with a suboptimal rookie if need be, with that much money in bank. So, yeah, I think if you downgrade, it's not too early to upgrade, especially if you have cash in bank. All right, so that covers the major topics for the week, and now we'll just move through the major outs and ins that we got questions about. We spent a bit of time on JJ and the rookie, so we'll cross through these relatively quickly, and we'll start with the outs. So the first one is from Matt, or at Throttlefinger on Twitter. Thank you for your question. Lonergan needs to be gone again. What do you guys think about that? So Jesse Lonergan, he's scored 96, 67, 75, and 60. He's gone up 10K. His break even 75. And despite playing those midfield minutes and Gold Coast doing reasonably well, it hasn't quite translated into premium-like scores yet. Thoughts on him?
I think it's really similar to my situation with Degoe. I think it's pretty borderline. Like, if you're bringing a rookie onto the field, then you're not really gaining a whole lot, but then you're sort of stalling with someone like Lonergan. So I think it's fairly borderline, but I can definitely see a trade being worthwhile.
For me, it's an easy hold. I think if you had cash in bank and you had a downgrade and you wanted to look to upgrade someone, Lonergan would be somebody that I'd think like, oh, that looks like a guy that I'd upgrade. I'm not confident on his cash generation. But if I weren't in that situation, like similar to my advice to you, Mark, about Degoe, I'd recommend keeping. Like, I don't see him dropping that much from 356K. Like, he's at his basement, but he has a couple of 90s or 100s, or he scores one massive 140 week and all of a sudden kicking yourself if you trade him out. So I think you're sort of priced in there.
I think you're talking best case scenario, so I think it's more borderline than that.
I'll be the tiebreaker and side with you, Mark. I'd say keep the faith, yeah. You picked him for a reason, so hopefully it comes off.
Suck it, Mark. That's why we should have a third point.
Where are you guys banked again?
All right, next question is from Scott McNaughton. All right, moving to the Rucks now. Smith is stinking it up. Looks like consistency will be an issue. Is
Massive
it worth
issue.
Trading him now? So, unfortunately, the mid-price route has not worked this year, and it shows that you shouldn't try and force a certain structure from season to season. You pick based on the players, and unfortunately, he's not quite working out at the moment. He could definitely turn things around, but at 400K, I would be tempted to trade out because you'd be
not
using
much-
him... As a
Not
step
as much time as I was hoping. I've got him in draft, and he's just playing way too much full forward.
Yeah, they like Stanley a fair bit in the Rucks, so he's getting a fair go there, and it looks like, much more like 60-40 than it is 80-20. So, if you have the funds, especially with a downgrade in the works this week, I would be looking at trading up.
I think in the question, it mentions Stephen Martin, wait a couple of weeks for his price to drop. If Steph plays this week, I think that's probably a really good strategy.
Yeah.
Because he's probably not going to score amazing this week. His scores hasn't been crazy so far this year, but he did seem to be on his way to a really good score on the weekend. So I think you'd get him pretty cheap, and that seems like a pretty good pathway to a really elite ruckman.
If he averages, I think, 100 for the next couple of weeks, he will still drop something like 40K. So there's definitely value to be had there. I would question whether or not that 40K is worth it and whether or not you think that you could have points on field. I mean, that could be to the tune of 100 points, potentially the difference between Martin and Smith, depending on how Smith scores. So there's definitely some risk there, but I think it's a good consideration for sure. All right, next question is from at Year of the Mar. No fence sitting on this one. I want both your calls on trade or hold on Barlow. No depends, and I'll hold you to it. So it sounds like dissatisfaction with Michael Barlow is certainly brewing. I mean, to be fair to the bloke, 81's his second highest score of the season so far. And that happened in a loss to an undefeated team. So thoughts?
It's really hard to answer in a question. My thoughts are still looks awful. Want to see him in a win. He's playing Carlton this week. I don't think that I could drop him before he played Carlton, so therefore don't trade.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, break even's at 88, so he's not going to plummet in price or anything. I'd hold as well.
Yep, same as me. So if you look at his last two scores, 99 and 81, that holds pretty well into a price
but
movement
if you're
this week.
Just like if you've been actually watching him play, he looks shit.
Yes, he's fumbly, he's not marking properly, doesn't look like he's covering the ground very well.
No free possessions, yeah.
But you'd expect that with bloody Freo 0 and 4. I think if any of us saw that happening, we wouldn't be starting with Mickey Barlow. So, yeah, it's unfortunate, but we're hoping things turn around. Starting with Carlton this week. All right, next question is from at Duke Cummington. Move out Tom McDonald for a downgrade option. And before any of us answer this, I will move into the next question, which is from at Gigi Hupo. Melbourne has improved. Is Tom McDonald potentially a top 6 defender? He'll be very cheap next week. So I think the fact that people are, including myself, are considering potentially trading in McDonald as a value option should probably point toward you not wanting to trade McDonald out with a correction trade. I think you've seen quite poor scores 3 weeks in a row now, but all you can do is keep your fingers crossed and hope things turn around. I'm singing that tune at least. Do you guys agree with that?
A little bit like Barlow, I guess, but he's not really on my radar to bring in.
Yeah, I'm definitely looking out for him in a couple of weeks' time. He's showed what he can do last year, and I think that just happens with tall defenders. They go through peaks and troughs, and unfortunately for people that started with him, he started poorly. But yeah, I can hold.
I think this year he's missing that backup other key defender though. Like last year, Dunn was in really good form, but this year, like Oscar McDonald played round one. I think he is missing a little bit of support back there.
Yeah, I definitely wouldn't be trading him in this week. At least want to see a little bit of a turnaround in form, because it is a danger picking up a player before he's turned things around on the hope that he will, and then he just never does. But having said that, I wouldn't be trading him out. Now, the last two questions, and we're looking at the trade in targets. Is it time to consider Jared Waite as the option? Now, I don't think anybody would have bloody called Jared Waite being the top scoring player by almost 10 points after four rounds, but the guy's not scored below 120. The problem is, he's also gone up 129,000 in that time. He's priced at 564,000. Like, oof. Surely that's too much to pay for a bloke who's fairly injury prone.
He hasn't played more than 20 games since 2008.
Yeah.
I find it really hard to justify bringing someone like him in when the highest career average he's had ever is 98 and he's 33 years old.
Yeah.
So looking at averages, it seems so unlikely that he's going to average more than 110 at 33 when he's never done it before. He could. He has had patches where he's done it, and he could somehow have a massive year and it all holds together and North win the flag or something and it all works out. But to me, that's just way less likely to happen than him getting injured and coming back to Earth.
Yeah. I think a big part about Supercoach and upgrading is deciphering between the blokes who are having hot patches of form and the blokes who have really stepped up to that next level. And those are really hard decisions most of the time. Last year, I made terrible decisions with players like Brody Smith, where they just turn things around the other way. I think you just got to be really wary in Supercoach not to be chasing last week's points. Now, if you made a mistake and you've missed out on a top six player or a top eight player, whatever, they're top in their position and you're losing points every week by not getting them, absolutely, jump on that train. But I don't think Jared Waite is that player, unfortunately, and it feels a bit like chasing last week's points to me. But they are 4-0. He's averaging 137. It's hard to speak ill of him, and I have picked him in the past when he was still at Carlton. So in a top four team, he does look really exciting and good and all those things, but that's way too much money to be paying for an injury-prone player in my eyes. Faz?
You mentioned the 4-0 start. I think their unbeaten record is in jeopardy the next 2 weeks. They got the Suns up there and then the Red Hot Bulldogs at Etihad Stadium. So I'd be surprised if they keep winning. And yes, so I wouldn't be surprised if we saw a low score amongst the next two games.
Having said all that, though, I mean, if North are a top four team, we've seen Waite average 95 in the past. He could potentially average 100 for the season and be a good pick. I just think it's too risky.
I'm not sure that I'd see North as a top four team. I think that got Adelaide round one. That's a good team that they beat, but they've only beaten Brisbane and Melbourne, and Freo look a lot worse this year. And they were not big wins, like, particularly against Melbourne. So I think they're probably more a sort of bottom four in the top eight, if that makes sense, than a top four team for me.
All right, so we'll move on to the next question here from at Jesse Brighton. Am I silly for considering Westhoff? Now, I put him on because I was keeping track of him. I like to look for these value guys. Now, Westhoff had a 24 in round two. His lowest score apart from that is round three with an 85. So 85, 99, and 109 are his other scores. That 24 cycled out now because he's played two games since round two. His break-even 77. He's priced at 442,000 now. Now, understandably, Port Adelaide, despite their draw, you know, they're not doing as well, and he doesn't look as attractive as if you were confident of their finals prospects. But having said that, he's in under 2,000 teams. Surely this is a little bit of a POD that could provide some value.
Yep, averaged over 100 on the run home last year. Definitely could work out. You'd want to hope that Port get better, though.
Yeah, I think Ryder being out for the year definitely is a boon for Westhoff because they play similar, like, forward switching into the ruck sort of roles.
Well, and Schultz being out as well means that he's going to have more responsibility on him.
Yeah, but Dixon being in the team means he's not taking the number one, so it's definitely good signs. Faz, your thoughts on Westhoff?
It's a guy I've never really considered in Supercoach before, but I'm looking at his previous scoring, and maybe I should have been, because he's got, you know, above a 90 average the last 3 years and only missed one game in that whole time, so... Yeah, if you can get him for a cheap pickup, then yeah, it could be a really nice point of difference.
Yeah. Having said that, I don't think we recommend everyone, our listeners get him.
He's
but
not a must have. No.
Yeah, but I think at that price point, you know, considering that 24, definitely very, very tempting. All right, guys, that wraps up this week's show. Had a bit to cover, talked for a while, so we better end this. Mark, any finishing thoughts?
There's a new website, SC Trade Counter. go and put your team name in there. You can track people's trades. It's quite interesting.
Could be a game changer, and I have a feeling we'll be talking a little bit more about it when we have a bit more time over the next few weeks. But very, very interesting for league finals and even the people chasing for the overall victory. I mean, if you have 50k on the line, that seems like absolute gold. Faz, any finishing thoughts to round up the round 5 episode?
I just say thanks for having me on, guys. Really enjoyed it, and I look forward to seeing you all again sometime later in the season.
Fantastic to have you on, Faz. Great to hear how your team's going, even though it's not faring too well, hopefully.
Better news in a few weeks' time.
Yeah, still good to catch up with you, mate. So to our community out there, thank you again. Massive thanks for joining us each week. We really appreciate your support on social media. And, you know, if you have time, give us a 5-star review on iTunes. Always much appreciated. So that wraps up this week's show. All the best for your trades this week, and we'll catch you again next week. See ya.
See ya.
Bye. Jump up, let's get crazy. Jump up, let's get crazy. Let's get crazy. Let's get crazy.